Pushkin. Hi, I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Marlo Thomas. And we're going on a series of double dates to find out
what makes a marriage last. It was a bitter cold November morning when we got to the airport. We were heading out to Chicago, my old stomping grounds, to visit Reverend Jesse Jackson and Jacqueline Jackson.
Not only are these two civil rights icons, his work with Dr. Martin Luther King, her lifelong activism, but they've been married throughout it all nearly 60 years. I was really looking forward to it.
Only problem, our flight from New York was severely delayed, and we were 5 hours late for our date.
It was awful. I really hate being late for anything. But even though it was already evening by the time we landed, they said, come on over anyway.
I've known them for decades, and that's the kind of generous people they are.
How are the children?
Well, they all still talk to me.
That's a good sign.
Jesse was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease several years ago. But despite his condition, his spirits were lively. And Jackie, she's always full of life. As we settled in, Jesse began to recall their early days.
When I first met Jackie, she was in college. She was into modern dance, and she was hip into the library. And beautiful beyond measure. Parents were very strict on her. Those are pluses. She was in church all the time. Those are pluses. So you're trying to evaluate what values you share. The foundation, many marriages don't last long because they have no rootage. A tall tree, roots are as deep as the tree is high. There are no roots, there's no foundation. When the wind blows, it can't take it. That's what I see.
Mm-hmm. And what tree grows without roots? It cannot grow.
Cannot grow.
Right.
I can't get over how lucky you were to find Jackie. I mean, other women would have run out the door because you were never home.
I love you,
Phil. I was lucky.
I told him because he was going and going and going, and then he wouldn't inform me. I went to him and I said, Reverend, you're supposed to make me happy. And because I really felt a man is supposed to make you happy. That's his job. And we've always had a very kind of semi-frank relationship. And he looked at me and he said, I can't do that. It was like, what do you mean you can't make me happy? He said, that's your responsibility to you.
Whoa.
Oh, I hated him. I was depressed for months. It's like, that's not why you get married.
You have to make your partner secure.
I'm going to finish my story, really.
But that's an interesting thing. But that's an interesting thing to say, that you thought he should make you happy.
I thought he should make me happy. But he helped me to grow because I think after hating him for a full year, planning a divorce and running away, I figured it out. There are things he enjoys that I don't. He likes sports. And early in the marriage, I love theater. And he'd go to sleep and snore. And that was very embarrassing for me. And it occurred to me that I shouldn't humiliate him by imposing onto him the things that I absolutely enjoy, and he made me miserable when we did it together. And yet he was open in his thinking that I could call my friends and we could go out to the theater. You know, in many of these relationships, if you don't like what I do, there is a serious problem. But you can make it beyond liking what I do.
In retrospect, however, what we had in common is when marriage was built. We demonstrated together. We resented Southern segregation. We resented the barbarism of racist institutions. make provisions for our children. And at the end of the day, it's about mutuality, mutual security, and fulfillment. At first it is, it's exciting, it's young, it's fresh, it's sexy. But then responsibility comes, and you have to share your resources. I mean, one of the properties of love is trust. Can you trust somebody? If you can't trust, love won't last very long if you can't trust somebody. And trust them to make decisions that matter to you. Love matters too. But love has to mature. And there are qualities of life that add to love's maturity.
Why didn't you tell me these things?
Because Jackie was academically inclined. And so was I, that had in common. She was church-based, and so was I. She marched for our freedom and our dignity, and we did that together. We took risks together.
But that was not uncommon.
Dr. King came to me and said, I want you to leave seminary and work with me full time. I was determined to finish seminary. Jackie said, you should go work with that man.
When he was vacillating as to whether or not to keep his scholarship at the Chicago Theological Seminary, through the Rockefeller Foundation, he had a scholarship to be here in Illinois at the school. So our housing and everything was in that package.
Right.
And so when it came time for Reverend to make the decision, he was trying to weigh what's to happen with my family if I go fooling with this guy full time.
Dr. King.
I'm
not sure if I was married to someone else that would have made that decision. Uh-huh. Many of my friends ended up working, say, for the Urban League or something. They made more, less risk, and they had kind of stable administrative jobs.
Right.
Where Dr. King was, you might not come home.
And you did not make any money.
And did you give up the scholarship?
Yeah.
Of course he accepted Dr. King's offer to join him. Jesse had been on this journey for civil justice since that historic summer in college in 1960.
He'd been assigned a paper to write and needed to borrow a book from the local library in Greenville, South Carolina. It was a white library, and when they refused to give him the book, he went out back and cried.
Eventually, he and his friends went back to that same library and staged a sit-in in protest.
We went to the library together. We were arrested. That's when I lost my fear of death and jails, frankly, the first time I went to jail. We were booked that afternoon, but the fact that we'd gone to be booked was a big deal, all over television. You know, it was a breakthrough. I got home, I'll never forget my father. I learned much of my politics from my father.
That's your stepfather, Charlie Henry.
My father. And so he was a janitor. And we'd go by the bank on a Sunday afternoon. We would buff the floors and empty the cans. Anyhow, the door opened. And Mr. the man who was in charge of the firm, with two of his friends, they were tall guys, kind of drinking, did a little red in the face. He goes, hey, Charlie, come here. At 7, I was very aware of the tone and what that meant. He said, if you don't come, I'm going to kick you. They stopped the buff machine. Took his keys out. I didn't know what was going to happen. So he walked and said, Mr. Templeton, you take the keys. I can't stop you from kicking me. And you can't have the leg back with which you do the kicking either. We walked out the bank. My politics came from watching that act of bravery, my father.
Jesse's activism with Dr. King took him deeper and deeper into the civil rights movement, so their work was often on the front pages of the newspapers.
Can you imagine how complicated it must have been for Jesse and Jackie to be doing all of that with kids to raise?
I had three children at that time, small children, and one daughter, Santita, and two boys who are 10 months apart.
I speak at high schools all over America. I never spoke at her high school. Yeah, I wanted to be Jesse Jackson's daughter. You see, that's the tension, because how do you negotiate this high profile stuff? And so my wife stepped in the gap. Remember one time Jesse Jr. said, I could come home from the road and his team played a little basketball game up at the academy. I didn't go. He said, Dad, I appreciate all you've done, but nothing like my mother coming to my game to see me play ball. I felt bad about it, because I'm always negotiating between how the hell does Jesse Jackson factor. And so it was about assuming responsibility. But Jack understood it, and she transmitted it to them. Mm-hmm. In my work, I never was inhibited from doing what I had to do. Mm-hmm. My creativity was unlimited, and time spent on the road. And my work was risky. More often we had threats.
Bad.
And I had guys around the house with guns.
We moved from the University of Chicago.
Right.
Because we were working with Dr. King.
Uh-huh. Right.
And because of our work, we had access to many of the people who were products of the Great Migration. That's when so many African Americans,
right,
with the oppression in the South, came to Illinois.
Right.
Most of those people are deceased now, because that was another age, our elders. And because they knew that we were working with Dr. King, and people kind of dove in and embraced us and protected us. We lived on the third floor of their apartment. And I remember Spencer Leake now, who is one of the largest funeral parlor services in this area, African American. And I remember his mother saying, "You'll be very safe here. You'll be safe."
Jackie is such a brave and determined woman. She wanted to be down in the trenches with the people they were fighting for.
That's right. She didn't have what Jesse calls First Lady-itis.
Jackie never had First Lady-itis.
I like to sit in the audience, because once you sit in the audience, you can hear what they truly think. I go to the grocery store, and I interact with people in the parking lot. I fight over my right to park in this space, and you saw me here first. And then somebody will say, "Aren't you Jesse Jackson's wife?" I said, "No, I left her at home." No, I'm Jacqueline Jackson. I still exist, you know. I can think for myself. And I think women are very essential in holding a marriage. And marriages are based on the attitude, really, of the woman. If she wants to keep it, she will keep it.
Right.
And if she's finished with it.
Yeah. I completely agree.
It's done.
We'll have more after a quick break. We're back to our conversation with Reverend Jesse Jackson and Jacqueline Jackson. Jackie never had First Lady-itis, but that's because she was already doing her own thing, traveling the world with diplomatic delegations and on fact-finding missions.
Jackie met Arafat first, the delegation in Lebanon. I met him as Jackie's husband. Hmm. This international dimension of her life, her vision.
Right.
She met Daniel Ortega first,
mm-hmm,
and Castro, mm-hmm, and Arafat, and the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
I was home with the children. And Jackie was in Lebanon. And they were bombing. I saw on television they were bombing. I panicked. And she was came back early and said, I could take care of myself. I couldn't imagine her being over there and me being home.
And a lot. And purpose. You both have led a purposeful life, and you both have supported each other and inspired each other, it feels.
Most of the time. Now, that does not mean that we don't fight. I have to fight with him to keep him sharp. And I do that every morning. We have our exercise.
What is your exercise?
I shout at him and I call him names.
What's the name you call
him? I'm not telling it. It's our little secret.
Does he call you names?
But if I call her one name in return, she'll never forget it. So I just have to take that blow.
Let me just comment about how I see you. First of all, you're both very good looking, always have been. And Jesse really enters the room. He's a tree. He's like, you know, he's
That's
very
right.
tall. And I have a feeling that, you know, you can yell at him and he's not going to run out the door.
He won't run out the door, no. So, well, he takes punches. Oh, he's good.
Let him finish his punch. He's about to say something profound.
Oh!
You're not jealous of him. You're never concerned, it seems to me.
I'm not jealous of him. No.
You're not worried about
him. I'm not worried about it.
Mr. No. Tall man.
Good
speaker.
Looking.
Yeah.
Good
yeah.
looking. I was, we went out one night, and this lady was so stunned to see Reverend. So she ran past me. And she just grabbed him by his neck, and she just swung and swung and swung. And I kept moving further back. It's like, I'm not getting the hell beat out of me. You deal with this woman. And he kept saying, my wife, Jackie, come here. My wife, Jackie.
I think we've been in that situation a few times.
Well, perhaps. But there was a more serious intrusion into the Jacksons' marriage.
We were in Atlanta, maybe a year, and this woman walked up to me. My God, she was gorgeous, and she had her camera. And she said, I want to take a picture. And I said, oh, you can. She said, and who are you? I said, I'm his wife. She said, how can you stay with him after he went out there and had this baby? I said, this one is taken. And you cannot stay around him too long because you're too good looking. Now you take your picture and leave.
What baby? What was she talking about?
The California. Reverend has a child. I have five children. Reverend has six. So
was this woman's child?
No, oh. But she wanted to address it.
Oh.
And I wanted to let her know that I could.
May I ask a question? Mm-hmm. I don't know about this baby thing. Would you mind telling me?
I don't discuss it because it's something in my past that I dealt with mm-hmm. and feel very comfortable. The young lady now is about, Ashley is about 20, and she's at Spelman. She's in school, and I'm very comfortable and... I'm very...
Well, did you get mad at him? Did you throw him out or anything?
Of course I did. Because I, you know, as a wife, you feel you're the sexiest. You're the best.
I guess what I'm trying to say, Marlo, before we go is this. While there are days of sunshine and the wind behind your back, there are rainy days, too.
I don't think it's... I don't like to say that, Reverend.
No.
There are some realities.
Let me
we are people. Nobody in this game, in this world today, is perfect. We are imperfect beings. There are a lot of flaws. And one of the things, my attitude in life is, I don't like to discuss problems of anybody. Tell me how you got out of it. Tell me how you feel today. Tell me how you move forward. I call him Reverend, so it reminds him of who he should be.
What interested me when you said that is you kept that marriage together.
Yes.
You said, this is not going to destroy my marriage.
I promised in sickness and in health, in good times and in bad, through triumphs and sorrows. This marriage is a test of my character. And I learned this from my mother. Every time I received my report card, the first thing she looked at was my character. I don't look for good people. I try to be it myself and be the example. And that's a test of my character.
Oh, I so admire you. I do.
I am very proud to be a woman. If I have another chance to come back, I want to be a woman. I love being an African-American woman. I want women to be the very best people. Women are so necessary for men, and that's why women were created last, so that all of the finest ingredients that God may have missed when you were being composed. The Lord thought about. Lord stopped, rested, said, when he looked at men, I need a little help, and he's going to need some help. And God sat down and thought about it and created me.
Did a second draft.
I'm more married than I was 40 years ago. Well, I would not to do without my wife. I pray to God he didn't take me first. I'd be lost. I couldn't survive.
That's the Reverend Jesse Jackson and Jacqueline Jackson. It's amazing. Their hard work for justice and their long partnership have been a part of American history.
They certainly have. And I've got to say, it was fun to be back in Chicago again.
Yep, just like the old days. Until next time, I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Marlo Thomas.
I really thank you. And it was a delightful interview.
Oh, it was terrific.
It was delightful.
Double Date is a production of Pushkin Industries.
The show was created by us and produced by Sarah Lilly. Michael Bahari is associate producer. Musical adaptations of It Had to Be You by Stellwagen Symphonette.
Marlo and I are executive producers, along with Mia Lobel and Lital Molad from Pushkin.
Special thanks to Jacob Weisberg, Malcolm Gladwell, Heather Fain, John Schnars, Carly Migliori, Eric Sandler, Emily Rostek, Jason Gambrell, Paul Williams, and Bruce Kluger.
If you like our show, please remember to share, rate, and review. Thanks for listening.